opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Good day, everyone. Welcome again to another edition of Boomer Generation Radio. This is your host, Richard Address, coming to you from the studios of WWDB AM 860 here in beautiful, sunny Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And we're streaming live on WWDBAM.com. And again, a reminder that if you want to reach the station, reach the program, you can like us on the Boomer Generation Radio Facebook page or email us at boomergenerationradio@gmail.com. And we'll be back with our guest, Jane Tebow from Kentucky, right after this word from our sponsors at Kendall.
Hi, this is Kendall staff member Sheila Sylvester. This portion of Boomer Generation Radio is brought to you by Kendall Outreach. Kendall Outreach serves the field of aging by raising public awareness of important health care issues of older adults, and it provides education and training in the development and implementation of comprehensive approaches to safe, individualized, long-term care practices. Kendall Outreach has been sharing Kendall's approach to quality care with consumers, advocates, providers, government agencies, and related organizations since 1989. To learn more, visit KendallOutreach.org.
Hello again, and this is your host, Richard Address, on Boomer Generation Radio, and welcome back. And through the magic of our producer, Tony, and a little quieter music... We'd like to welcome Jane Tebow from Louisville, Kentucky. Jane, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
Good to be here.
Hi. How are things in Kentucky today, Louisville?
Very, very warm. Sunny, but very warm.
It's a nice city. I was there once.
You'll have to come back.
And actually bumped into one of my childhood heroes at when I was doing a convention there. But that's another story for another time. So we're welcoming Jane Tebow, a professor emerita of clinical gerontologist from the University of Louisville School of Medicine, an author of many books, retreat leader, workshop leader, spiritual director. But in your bio, one of the most interesting lines, Jane, is you're reserving your time and strength now for helping elders find meaning and purpose. What does that mean?
Well, what that means really is that I have encountered over the years, I've run a geriatric evaluation and treatment program, many older adults who say, I'm old and tired, and what is it all for? And often when they even get to the point where they're in some pain, they'll say, just why doesn't God take me? But down here in Kentucky, very often they'll say, why don't they just take me behind the barn and shoot me? And these are kind of humorous, but I take them seriously because it represents a sense of meaninglessness, a lack of purpose, or a failure to find a new purpose with retirement. And this distressed me because it seems to be associated with, or anecdotally, with poor health. So I just decided in my own retirement to, as well as my research earlier, to work on this.
The health and wellness, you make this linkage now to what you just said, Jane, between this seeming running out of purpose or lack of purpose and a decline in health. And that is that universal? And your experience?
I can't say it's totally universal. But what I do see is that once people lose their purpose in life, which is linked to a will to live, then they seem to just kind of wither away. And there's been lots of research that shows that even if, say, somebody in the nursing home is given a plant to take care of, they'll perk up. And it's something as simple as that, or the need to take care of an animal. We see now grandparents who are in their 80s and 90s taking care of great-grandchildren, bringing them up. And these folks seem to have, even though it's hard work, seem to have a vitality, something that's keeping them alive, somebody who needs them,
well,
the bottom line.
I mean, in our tradition, I think it's Abraham Joshua Heschel said human beings are people who need to be needed. And once we lose, and I believe that 100%,
mm-hmm.
once we lose the idea that we are needed by someone or something, it's difficult. Is there an environmental, or let me just say it straight out. Do you think any of this has to do with this lack of purpose or gradually losing a sense of purpose or meaning? In the fact of putting people in facilities and putting people in a nursing home where they're just, you know, the word warehouse is a horrible word, but we've all had experience of working with these people, and you know it's a horrible thing to consider, but it's real easy, I think, to lose your sense of meaning and purpose as a human being in a situation like that.
It is, but it depends on the institution. There are some very, very fine assisted living homes, as well as retirement communities and even nursing homes, where the program is such that it pulls people out of their rooms, out of their chairs, and gives them something to do for somebody else. For example, I've been involved with a Catholic nursing home here in town, and groups of these in this nursing home get together once a week to pray for, but also to dedicate their suffering energy for someone or some cause that they choose from the news that week. And what they get together and they go around the room saying what their predominant suffering is for that particular week. And they recognize that it takes a lot of energy to suffer. And they offer that energy to a single person. It may have been somebody who was injured in a car crash. It may have been something more global. And they really have a sense of having, even in their suffering and illness and pain, they have something to offer the larger community. And I think that, I mean, this is just one example, but Bill Thomas, the geriatrician who brought animals and plants into nursing homes, was able to energize people from a more lethargic, purposeless state into actively being involved in the human community again.
Yeah, I think
so. It depends on the institution.
Yeah, I think we have Bill Thomas booked in September. I think he's
great.
I think he's tentatively accepted an invitation to be interviewed here on Boomer Generation Radio. You mentioned
Wonderful.
Jane. We're speaking with Jane Thibeault from Louisville, Kentucky, a clinical gerontologist from the University of Louisville School of Medicine. You mentioned that the concept of prayer, and I know you come from a fairly diverse but strong spiritual background. In your work, in your research, how important is that spiritual element in recapturing, keeping, staying with, or recovering a sense of meaning?
I think it's huge, and that's why basically I'm dedicating the rest of my career, my life to this, because and I talk about I use spirituality in a very narrow and a very broad way. So you have people who are actively religious in the sense that they're highly connected to a synagogue, a mosque, or church, or an institution of religion. You also have people who have a tremendous sense of connectedness with the human community, who may not be connected to a deity, but they still have a sense of connectedness to a larger meaning. And so I work with that whole continuum. What they've found research-wise with people who are connected to an in an institutional way, is that their health is better because if they go to services once a week, the rest of the community have a chance to, one, a note if they're not there, and two, take notice if they don't look well. And a lot of faith communities now have nurses and other congregants who have banded together to form, you know, support communities for not just elders, but anybody who's in experiencing difficulty. So there, the other piece is that an institutional setting, a faith-based setting, is the only, when you think about it, it's one of the very few, if not the only place where elders are mainstreamed into the larger community. So if you go to synagogue, for example, on a regular basis, and you're part of that community, you interact with children, with babies, with you know, young adults, with people your own age, in a normal way. If you lose your spouse, for example, the community remembers who you were when you were married, who you were when you had children, and so forth. So it's a very important, and I think a lot of faith-based communities don't realize how important they are to elders.
Yeah, that's another story for another time. It's one of our hobby horses then, trying to get more and more congregations to be aware of, especially the drift of baby boomers, at least in the Jewish community, away from synagogues.
Yes.
For a whole variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
We're speaking with Jane Thibeault, Professor Emerita, Clinical Gerontologist at the University of Louisville Medical School, a spiritual director, workshop and retreat leader. And we're going to come back, and you, I want to talk to you about this very, very interesting idea that you're working on called Elder Council.
Mm.
That I want to pursue, because it's a very exciting and very, very interesting concept that you're working on. And we want to do this right after I bring you a little message from our major sponsor, Kendall.
Hi, this is Kendall resident Harry Hammond. This portion of Boomer Generation Radio is brought to you by Kendall, a system of not-for-profit communities and services that advocates for and empowers older adults to reach their full potential. Kendall is committed to working with others as we together transform the experience of aging. To learn more about Kendall, that's K-E-N-D-A-L, visit discoverkendall.org or call toll-free 888-759-0128.
Welcome back to Boomer Generation Radio. Today, our guest in our first segment, Jane Thibeault, Professor Emerita, Clinical Gerontologist at the University of Louisville School of Medicine, really devoting her life to, as she says, reserving her strength for helping elders find meaning and purpose. That's a pretty you know, nice chunk of things to do. And let's save the world one relationship, one person at a time. Jane, you mentioned this. You're working in this thing called an elder council, which is kind of like interesting. So what is that, and how does it work, and what's going on with this?
Well, let me tell you, part of this is a little bit selfish. I'm going to be 69 in October. So we're talking about not me and they, but an
us.
Situation.
Yes, that's us.
And the theme is, the question that I asked myself is, you know, by the end of our lives, and this is, I'm not the only one who's asked this, by the end of our lives, shouldn't we be all used up instead of wasting away? You know, even with our, you know, even if we have illnesses. And our Department of Family and Geriatric Medicine for the past 5 years has given a golden award for optimal aging. And what we try to do is find people 80 and older in the community and in any level of health, who inspire younger people not to fear aging. So if you have a great aunt Sally who at age 90 is still going to a food pantry or still going to a soup kitchen and helping out, or if she's going to, or if an uncle is going to read to young children at a daycare center, these are folks who have who are engaged in life and have accomplished one of the developmental tasks, which is transcending preoccupation with your body. And so despite whatever ails them, they continue to contribute. And as I was helping to give the award a couple of years ago, I saw that these folks were also accompanied by many older adults who were part of their friendship systems and their volunteer systems and so forth. And it occurred to me that, you know, why this is an enormous, there were about 500 people there, and it was represented an enormous body of wisdom. So I thought, we need to harvest this wisdom and not, you know, not let it go to waste. And so I started looking at ways to, you know, get people together to start talking about what they could continue to contribute. And first thought of maybe a Peace Corps type of thing for elders, and elders do go into Peace Corps. But I came across a phenomenon called, or an organization called Elder Council. ELDERCOUNCIL, that was started in Newcastle-on-Tyne in England. And it was an informal gathering of people, of elders, who were concerned about the fact that the center of Newcastle was declining, that businesses were closing, and elders themselves were staying in their apartments and not coming out, becoming more and more isolated, and things were not looking good for Newcastle-on-Tyne. And they put their heads together and tried to figure out what would the, you know, what might have caused that. And lo and behold, a number of them said that they thought that elders would come out of their apartments and go to these, you know, shops, the butcher shop and the tea shop and so forth, if they could use the bathroom. That as we age, we need to use the bathroom more often, and these establishments were only allowing people who were their customers to use their restrooms. And so the group went to each business on the main street and said, we can almost guarantee that if you let older adults go to your restrooms, your business would improve. Well, lo and behold, by a year later, the elders were out of their apartments. They were, you know, they were coming down for tea and, you know, what else, and the business was booming on Main Street. And so from that came a more institutionalized phenomenon called Elder Council. And the Elder Councils in England focus on improving the lives of people 50 and older through advocacy and volunteering and keeping local government aware of the needs of elders. And so I was fascinated with this, and I decided to see whether anybody here in Louisville was interested in starting a similar kind of thing, and had 20 people at the first meeting, and we decided to call it Elder Council, C-O-U-N-S-E-L, so that we would be able to put our heads together around issues offer our wisdom in a number of different ways. And we chose not to focus just on the needs of elders in the community. We have lots of resources here in Louisville, certainly lots of need, but there's a lot of need for attention to be paid to preschool children and children in the schools, as well as police and citizen interaction and so forth, as that's happening all over the place. So we meet on a monthly basis, and if I can tell you what our mission is, we're diverse elders within the Louisville community who gather together on a regular basis to harvest the wisdom, talents, and experience we have as older adults to contribute ideas for the community's well-being, to share our energy and work, and to practice compassion as our driving force and guiding principle. And compassion is important in that Louisville has signed up to be a compassionate city. And there are a number of clusters or subgroups, compassion in the arts, compassion in education, and so forth. And there's a fellow by the name of Terry McDevitt who was just about to start and had started a compassionate elders segment. And the two of us connected. He found out about the council, and I found out about compassionate, you know, Elder Louisville. And we've combined those to be called Louisville Compassionate Elder Council now. And we have written op-ed articles for the newspaper. We're involved in public forums. We're all involved in community work and volunteer work of one kind or another. But we have a fellow who's been an advocate, a civil rights advocate, all of his life, who's 94. And as he says, I can't go and stand in a line anymore. But what I can do is sit at a meeting and make suggestions for action.
So Jamie, this is really like, from what I'm hearing you say, a volunteer organization that really is an advocacy, pro-advocacy organization, purely voluntary, correct?
Purely voluntary, and we're not connected with anything. Nobody has a vested interest in us, so it leaves us, you know, freedom to speak out as we choose to speak out. And we're kind of a think tank plus action.
Okay.
But we start off as think tank.
Do you get involved with any legislative process in either local or state issues?
That is the next step. One of our next projects is to possibly invite African American grandmothers to host a party where they introduce their middle school children to the local police in that area, and invite the police to come with something, actually do a show and tell, have the police come and show them something of their personal lives, and have these children show the police what their desires are for their personal lives, and bring a show and tell, so that the police and the African American children form a bond of humanity rather than one of legal responsibilities and obedience and so forth.
So this all goes back to the meaning and purpose idea of growing up,
yes,
growing older, and keeping a sense of meaning and purpose. Because we're actually starting to run out of time for this segment. I just want to go back to one thing that you said at the beginning of your conversation on the elder councils about bringing together people to really talk about the fear of aging. I got to ask you, from the basis of your experience, your lifelong experience, your teaching, your clinical, your spiritual direction, your workshops, et cetera, is it a fear of aging or is it a fear of death?
It may be a fear of dying. Most people aren't afraid of death because they either believe that there's something afterwards or there isn't. And by that time, they're okay with either one. However, the dying process is something that people fear, whether it's dying due to dementia or dying, you know, from a painful illness. So it's the dying process with the fear of being a burden to others that accompanies that, that the period of time when one is very frail and totally dependent on others. We Americans have a necessity to be independent and haven't learned to do interdependence yet, and so the great dread is being a burden to family and society because of frailty and the long dying process that goes along with it. And so what we're hoping is that we bring people who are frail into this, so that they know that they can contribute, and we do workshops for people who are frail in nursing homes, and teach them how they can be supportive of the staff just through a smile, or a kind comment to one another, instead of focusing totally on oneself. So it really nursing home then becomes a community of people who are going through similar situations, and they can help one another through that rather than being tended to.
We have 30 seconds left in this segment. Last question. Do you find that clergy are more receptive to this now, or do you still see a reluctance on the part of just clergy to engage in these types of conversations?
I hate to say this because I have great friends who are clergy, but the clergy really, number one, have not been trained to work with this population. And I hear over and over again, for example, why should I bother visiting a congregant who has Alzheimer's disease? She won't even remember that I've been there.
But they do.
But they do. At the level of the soul, they know that they've been loved.
Jane Thibault, Professor Emerita Clinical Gerontologist from the University of Louisville School of Medicine, workshop leader, spiritual director. Devoting her life to bringing meaning and purpose to individuals as we age. Thank you very much, Jane, for being a guest
here
on Boomer Generation. You take care. Good luck. Have a good rest of the summer, what's left of it. Thank you so much. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And before we move into our little musical bridge, before we bring on Diane from Carrie, which is actually an interesting follow-up to part of what Jane was talking about advocacy, I want to remind you of another friend of the show, the Hecht Investment Group, of Peter Hecht, of Janie Montgomery Scott, which, as we've been telling you, provides concierge financial consulting and planning services. They use a formal investment process as their foundation, and as those who've participated with Peter know, that clients receive frequent communication and rapid response to questions. In this environment, there are few needs greater than our own when it comes to personal financial planning, and the Hecht Investment Group provides experienced guidance as well as an efficient management process that is very important in today's rather fluid environment. Additionally, Peter Hecht and his team can assist you in connecting to the investment banking department, which specializes in assisting middle market companies to achieve their strategic goals. We invite you to contact the Hecht Investment Group toll-free at 855-289-2168. That's 855-289-2168. Or visit the HechtInvestmentGroup.com. And they're on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And Janie Montgomery Scott, as you know, is a member of the New York Stock Exchange, FINRA, and the SIPC. It's the middle of the summer. And, you know, this is the music that really belongs to many of us, especially if you're tooling down the expressway, down to AC, and down to shore with the top down.
Like a She makes the Indy 500 look like a Roman chariot race. A lot of guys try to catch her, but she leads them on a wild goose chase. She'll have fun, fun, fun till her daddy takes a T-bird away.
Hi, this is Kendall staff member Sheila Sylvester. This portion of Boomer Generation Radio is brought to you by Kendall, a system of not-for-profit communities and services that advocates for and empowers older adults to reach their full potential. Kendall is committed to working with others as we together transform the experience of aging. To learn more about Kendall, that's K-E-N-D-A-L, visit discoverkendall.org or call toll-free 888-759-0128.
Welcome back to the second segment here of Boomer Generation Radio, coming to you from the studios of WWDB AM 860 here in Greater Philadelphia. And we're streaming live on WWDBAM.com. And we'd like to welcome, really very fortuitous, Jane in our first segment was talking about advocacy. And we have sitting here in the studio, and welcome Diane Menio, the executive director of CARI, which stands for the Center for Advocacy for the Rights and Interests of the Elderly, CARI. So welcome, Diane.
Thank you.
And could you just give us a little bit of a background on what CARI is, does, where it started, and I think why it started?
Yes, I would certainly like to do that. CARI started in 1977, and we were brought together by a coalition of groups, including the Gray Panthers and the Lutheran Council on Aging and the and many other groups that came together feeling that older adults, and this was 1977, very mm-hmm. different time, but at that time we had about a decade of publicly funded care for the elderly, and we really didn't have protections for them. And so it started with the idea of making sure that the protections were in place. And so not long after that, we had, well, almost 10 years, but after that, we had a national bill to reform nursing home care. And that's what created the licensing for nursing homes. And home care, many of those issues were on the top of our list. We're making sure that older adults were protected, that they had the quality of life they deserve, and that they were getting the best quality services possible. Things have evolved a lot over the years. I can say that our approach is all advocacy. We do help individuals through several programs, and our core program is our CARI line. And in that program, basically, we will handle whatever problem an older adult has or a caregiver has, or even a professional. We don't turn anyone away, and we don't care where they live. We answer calls from anywhere in the country. And so, because we also know that sometimes the caregiver doesn't live in the same place as right. the older adult and so on. Or they just, you know, we find, especially since the advent of the internet, that people go searching. And because our type of advocacy is quite unique, they find us and they call us regardless of where they are. And they're looking for help in their own community.
So I guess the next obvious question is, what's the number?
Our number, I can give you our number. I'll give you our 800 number.
Yeah,
I think that's
yeah.
the best number. It's 1-800-356-3606. That's 1-800.
Once again.
1-800-356-3606.
And so I'm sitting at home. I'm visiting my mom. My mom doesn't look well. My siblings are in Chicago and Portland. And we don't have necessarily I don't know what to do. And she's frail and having trouble breathing. I can pick up this phone and call this number, and you're going to give me help.
Yes. We're not a 24-hour line now. I will say we answer the phone between 9 and 5 on Monday through Friday.
So
we're not an
day.
Emergency service, but
okay.
we do provide that help. And, yes, you could call us about that, and we would try to help you understand how to look at that issue,
mm-hmm.
whether, you know, what resources might be available to you, what kinds of things you might be thinking about. Like, does your mother need to see a geriatrician? For instance, maybe she hasn't been getting evaluated properly. And so many times you can find that with a good geriatric assessment, you can find out how to what the issues are and treat those.
Do you give medical advice?
We don't give medical advice, but we will direct people in the right direction.
Because I have found in counseling families a lot of times in the work that I do, that I increasingly recommend to a caregiver who's talking to me about their mom or their dad who are aging, and I say, have you had mom or dad have a very, very thorough geriatric workup by a professional who can really spend the time? Are you finding that to be more and more necessity?
It is, and unfortunately, not everyone has access to a geriatric practice. In Philadelphia, we have a wealth of resources.
Right.
In geriatric medicine, and apparently in Kentucky as well, they right. in Louisville they have a program. So, but there are some places where people have less access. But I do know I was speaking to a friend the other day whose father is up in the northeastern Pennsylvania, and she's bringing him to Philadelphia to be evaluated. So there are resources, and I think it's growing. I mean, there are more physicians getting trained in geriatrics.
Really, because the geriatricians we've had and the gerontologists have all told us that there's less people going into geriatrics because of the money.
Yeah.
And that brings me to the next the question about that there's more getting people, more of us getting older. The baby boomers are now, every baby boomer alive is at least 50 years of age. Many caring for their elderly parents in their 80s, 90s, and hundreds. And the whole aspect is, so in your advocacy, is there a caregiving crisis? Is there a crisis in care, the people who are giving care, a lack of training, facilities, resources? And I imagine you deal with that on a daily basis.
Right. And we deal with the issue from a broad spectrum. Certainly we deal with people who are giving care in nursing homes and other settings, and also family caregivers who come to us and really are very poorly prepared. One of the things I wanted to mention to you is the AARP has been promoting something called the CARE Act. And the CARE Act is really focused on family caregivers, and it's actually something families don't often get. If anyone has had a loved one in the hospital, you might know how challenging it is to deal with. You know, suddenly you take healthy mom and she's broken her hip, and you've got to bring her home, or she lived alone maybe, and so what happens now? How do we manage that? And so the CARE Act would require hospitals to, first of all, to record who the caregiver is so that they're notified when things are changing, but also to help that caregiver and train that caregiver in how to provide the care when they go home.
Wow.
So that's a really important thing. And, at this point in time, I believe there's some interest in passing this in Pennsylvania. I'm not sure if it's been introduced yet, but it will be introduced, I believe. And it's something that people can weigh in on and advocate for. That's something else we do is public policy advocacy that we feel is very important.
Well, the thing that you mentioned, who would pay for the training of family caregivers in each individual hospital setting?
Well, I think the issue would be to, in some ways the cost is negligible. Because what they'd be doing is showing that caregiver before they leave how to provide the care. And the reason I say that is because what happens when family caregivers take that person home and they don't know how to provide the care, they can fall, they can hurt themselves more. Families get frustrated. The first thing they want to do when they see any problem is go right back to that hospital. And so what we have is readmissions. Now, you may know that under the Affordable Care Act, hospitals are, or actually it's before that, hospitals are penalized for readmissions.
Correct.
So in a sense, it's good. It makes good sense for hospitals to do that, because in the end, it may actually end up with cost savings.
Well, and also from my experience, both professionally and personally, I'd rather be in my house, in my environment,
right,
than in a facility. For a whole variety of reasons. And I also know we've had geriatricians here come on a regular basis. And I remember one of the conversations we had with Dr. Laskin many, many months ago was, look, here's how to make your house fall proof.
Right.
Because that's the biggest, I'm going to fall.
Right.
You trip over the rug, the loose piece of tile is up, and wow, you're back in the hospital and the process starts all over again. Talk to me about your advocacy legislatively. Do you lobby Harrisburg? Are you lobbying federal legislators, or how does Carrie work with that?
Well, I'll tell you, for the first thing I want to say about our advocacy is that all of our advocacy is informed by those people who call us.
Oh, okay.
So that's how we learn about the issues and we learn about what people need. And so we use that information and we talk to we try to educate them about these issues. We try to get them to understand the plight of caregivers, the plight of older adults who are frustrated and don't really know where to turn. And so we form our advocacy agenda around those issues. And so one of the, you just mentioned actually, that people want to stay in their own homes.
Right.
I mean, I think that's somewhat universal. Sometimes it's not possible, and we understand that. We want to make residential care as accessible to people as well, if it's necessary. But people want to stay at home. And so a lot of our advocacy currently is going to advocate for better access for people to be able to stay at home. We have a number of public programs available to people to do that. And we want to make sure that they're accessible and that they provide the quality of care that people need. And so we spend a lot of time in Harrisburg doing that. There are also some times when we do weigh in on federal legislation, like, for instance, the Affordable Care Act, and Medicare Part D was a big issue a number of years ago. And, when the regulations came out, we weighed in on that. We became a plaintiff, actually, in a lawsuit on the Medicare Part D because people who were in the Medicaid program and dual eligible for Medicaid and Medicare were basically forced out of the Medicaid program, which is where their prescriptions were paid for previously, and they were put into the Medicare Part D program, and they weren't able to change their plans, even though the plans may have changed their prescriptions. So now, actually, if you go into a Medicare Part D plan, and this was as a result of that suit, if you go into a Medicare Part D program and you are on a particular medication, even if they change their formulary, you will be covered under that old formulary until the open enrollment occurs.
This conversation, I have to ask you this question.
It's getting complicated.
No. Because in my experience, again, both professionally and personally, one of the many things that will drive just consumers absolutely crazy to just like scream is trying to maneuver the maze of insurance. Mm-hmm. So does Carrie help? So if I'm sitting with my parents, and I remember doing this with my mom on Medicare Part D, and she's a brilliant businesswoman. I have a couple of degrees, and it was like, well, you could have just thrown a dice up against the wall and say, well, whatever it is. Does Carrie help negotiate that maze?
Absolutely. We spend a lot of time doing that. And beginning in the fall, around sometime in October, we're going to be doing that. And that's one of our challenges, is being able to help all the people who need help with their Medicare open enrollment. At the same time, we're helping people who call us about elder abuse issues and all the other things we help people with. So, but it certainly is confounding, and each year things change, and so we've got a lot of education to do around that.
So real fast before we take this quick break, the number again, Carrie's number.
1-800-356-3606.
We're speaking with Diane Meany, the Executive Director of CARI here in Philadelphia, major advocacy program for the elderly, and we'll be right back with Diane after a little note from Kendall.
Hi, this is Kendall resident Harry Hammond. This portion of Boomer Generation Radio is brought to you by Kendall, a system of not-for-profit communities and services in 8 states that advocates for and empowers older adults to reach their full potential. Please join us in together transforming the experience of aging. To learn more about Kendall, that's K-E-N-D-A-L, visit discoverkendall.org or call toll-free 888-759-0128.
Welcome back to our last segment here on Boomer Generation Radio today. Speaking with Diane Meany, the Executive Director of CARI, an organization here in Philadelphia, and that stands for the Center for Advocacy for the Rights and Interests of the Elderly. It's easy for me to say. And based here in Philadelphia, major advocacy organization. Diane, you mentioned the overwhelming desire of people to stay in their home. There's been a rush of articles in the last couple of months. Put this on my website's Facebook page, too, about the increased use of technology. And evidently, there's a huge burgeoning market for technology for baby boomers as we age. And there was one article, I think it was in the Times maybe last month, that said if this trend continues, that the nursing home, the standard nursing home, may be absolutely obsolete or really be only the province of people just who can't afford anything else, because everybody's going to be able to stay at home, push a button, be monitored by somebody, have their daughter 100 miles away instantly notice if their heartbeat changes, et cetera, et cetera. Are you seeing this in some of the work that you're dealing with?
Well, certainly. It is certainly a way, especially for family caregivers who have worked during the day, for instance, to know what's happening, or long-distance caregivers to know what's happening, and also the communication between the medical professionals and, you know, because I remember, and this was, my father died more than 10 years ago, and he was monitored through his weight, and he had COPD, and all of that went right to the doctor, or a nurse probably, and they knew when he needed to get some more care or change his medication just from the information that was reported electronically. So certainly it goes a long way. I don't think the nursing homes or any kind of residential care is going out of business because of this. It would be nice to see us rely less on that kind of care. I think that there are a few people who need, unfortunately, won't be able to push those buttons. And, you know, we can't ignore the prevalence of Alzheimer's and other kinds of dementia that are much more challenging of care. And so, you know, 1 in 9 people, older adults, are affected with Alzheimer's or some other form of dementia.
And what I keep reading, and people we've had on the show as late as a couple of weeks ago, really keep coming back to this unbelievable wave of that's beginning now of Alzheimer's and dementia, and the fact that the society is totally unprepared to deal with this on every level. So the family caregiver, let's just talk about this, because I'm sure you get calls like crazy about this.
Yes.
How does a family, because my sense is that you do help family caregivers develop some sort of care plan or their own advocacy for their own self. How do you begin to work with families who they call you up and say, Mom has just been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. I haven't the faintest idea what to do. Should we move her into us? But we, on the long, how do we handle this?
Right. Well, I will tell you that we do walk people through issues. We want, you know, Is it practical for them to live with you? Is it practical for them to live on their own with supports? How does that work? I want to mention one other thing before I go on, and that is that we created a website called Caregiver GPS. And it basically means navigating that caregiving system. So
how does someone get on? That's important.
Caregiver GPS, www.caregivergps, that's it, .org. And so if you get on there, what you will see is something that looks a lot like a phone call that you would make to us. We walk people through, we ask questions and walk people through the process. And we created this in large part because a lot of caregivers can't call us during the day.
Mm-hmm.
Or they may need to just get a little more information before they even know what their questions
right,
are.
Right.
So we created that for that purpose. So I encourage people to look at that because I think that might be helpful. But I will say that, each situation is different. One of the first things, if you called about someone who was newly diagnosed, we'd certainly refer them to the Alzheimer's Association, which has a wonderful network of support groups for family caregivers. And so there, you know, that's certainly what we do. We don't provide those services directly. We refer out.
Mm-hmm.
So we would provide the kinds of referrals. We provide perhaps a referral to a number of geriatricians that they could choose from if they hadn't already done that. And so because sometimes, you know, I remember years ago my grandmother called me and said they told her that she had dementia. And I said, well, this is really funny because she's 84 years old and it doesn't usually happen in a day. And it turned out that she had a urinary tract infection. So you don't want right. to necessarily, and she was in the hospital at the time, so you don't want to necessarily just, you know, accept what someone tells you. You've got to have that assessment done by someone who knows how to do it. But the other thing I want to say is my mother ended up with something called Lewy body dementia, which is Parkinson's and dementia and lots of other awful things. And, if you had asked me 10 years ago, I would have said never would anyone I care about be in a nursing home. But my mother ended up dying in a nursing home because the level of care that she needed was something we couldn't provide at home any longer.
I walk that walk. I walk that walk.
So people, and that is one of the things, when it gets back to that electronic monitoring, I remember one of the first things we did was get my mother one of those buttons, you know, that you could push for emergency help. And then we realized that all she did was push it because she was very tactile and you know, so it was no use whatsoever.
No.
My
mom made sure she lost hers conveniently.
Yes. And this was, you know, so we really have to think more about what the continuum of care should look like for different types of people. So you break your hip, you probably don't need to be in the nursing home long term. You need to get rehabbed. You can get back and, you know, maybe your life will be a little different afterward, but you can continue to be independent. It's when dementia comes into play, I think, that it becomes more challenging. And, one of the other things, when I was feeling terrible guilt about the nursing home decision, I sat and talked to a geriatrician about it. And, you know, one of the things that she brought up to me was the isolation
mm-hmm.
that people have. And after my mother went into the nursing home, I realized that what she was getting, and I was visiting constantly, and my siblings were, but what she was getting was something she couldn't get at home any longer, and that she needed desperately. So in a lot of ways, we really need to be able to create programs that are going to work for everyone. So
mm-hmm.
those electronic monitoring things are great because they're going to help prevent somebody going into a hospital, declining, ending up going into a nursing home or, when it's not necessary, because we can keep tabs on what's happening. Some people are very independent and they're still that, but they have some need. I remember talking to a state official a few years ago about his mother, and he was telling me that all his mother was 90 something, and he said all she needed, she had diabetes. All she needed was to have a reminder every day to eat when she needed to eat, because otherwise she'd go into shock. And that would have been the end for her. She would have ended up in some kind of long-term care. So just sometimes it's just a small thing that needs to help someone stay at home.
When somebody calls the hotline or visits, somebody calls, does Carrie get involved? Do you get involved in any type of long-term or even short-term for what we would call pastoral counseling? In other words, the emotional issues, personal psycho-spiritual issues that are presented to family caregivers
right.
are so overwhelming to some people. Do you get involved with that at all, or do you refer them out?
It's not the way we set out Okay. It's not what we set out to do, and yes, we will refer people out for that. But we do have trained social workers on our staff, and so oftentimes people will call us because they're not getting it elsewhere.
Do you go out into the community, or is it just based in?
We generally do not see people in their homes. We see people. People come to us sometimes, but
what about workshops in nursing homes?
We do an awful lot of that.
So you do go out. Mm-hmm. So if somebody at, let's say, Shady Acres Nursing Home says this would be an important program to present to the parents of our residents, they would call you and you would come out and do a workshop on perhaps family caregiving.
Right. We have a long list of issues we will talk about: family caregiving, long-term care, elder abuse, you name it. And so we will speak at senior centers, housing, continuing care communities, nursing homes, wherever we're invited, civic groups.
Do you give referrals, references, opinions on home health care agencies? In other words, somebody calls the line and says, dad is coming back to the house. He's going to go back to his assisted living. He's going to need somebody several hours a day. I looked in the paper. There's 400 of these places. I don't know which one. My best friend said go here. Right. And my other best friend said, no, they're horrible. Go here. Do you help?
We will help them. I mean, what we try to do is tell them what to look for in those agencies. We also will narrow that list down. We don't want to tell them go to XYZ agency because that would be, a little bit of liability to us if something goes wrong. But what we will do is we'll look at which agencies we have found to provide better care. And that's, you can see actually, what also is available to consumers is to go online on the state's website to look at some of that information.
Right. Are there Medicare not ratings or stars for home health care agencies?
Medicare.gov.
Those
would be Medicare certified, and most of the agencies are not Medicare certified where you'd get home care. So that you'd have to go into the state information to get that because that's where they're licensed. So, but there are those places, but I'm saying that, but I'm not expecting that everyone would be able to find those things, but we can help them find that information if they need it, or we've already gone through that information so that we can let you know which agencies are in good standing, and also how to handle that home health care. You know, what are the right questions to ask? How do you express what your needs are? What can you expect from that engagement?
Because that issue is, that confronts a lot of families, and it's very, very frightening. So we have just a couple of minutes left in this segment. So real fast, the number?
1-800-356-3606.
The website?
www.carry.org and www.caregivergps.org.
And Carry is C-A-R-I-E. In the 1 minute and 30 seconds we have left, give me the three top things based upon your experience that family caregivers have to be aware of when they enter this arena.
Well, first of all, I think that you have to step back and take a breath and be aware that there are resources out there and to make the call. I mean, one thing everyone should know is that there's an area agency on aging anywhere in the country, and you should be able to find that number easily. We certainly can be called if you get that message. But it's to step back and to think and not to be rushed into making decisions. And I think that's one of the most important things is that a lot of times they're in a hospital situation where, they're being told mom has to be discharged tomorrow, you're taking her home, or she's going to a nursing home. You need to ask for more information. So caregivers really deserve more information. The other issue that I will say, and this kind of backs it up a little bit, is that everyone should be making plans for the future. And so I'm going to wrap it up there because we're out of time, but I will stress that one point. Please make your plans for the future.
Diane Mineo, Executive Director of CARI here in Philadelphia, thank you for being a guest here on Boomer Generation Radio. To all of you, have a great week. A big shout out to our friend Tim on his wedding. Congratulations. And to all of you, a great week. See you next week. Boomer Generation Radio here, 10 a.m. Eastern, WWDB AM 860.